We're back. Let's have a look at where we left off. We had seen that the Whitehead-Russell system here of calculus of sentences gives us these basic symbols to work with. If, then, either or, both and the little tilde, which is a symbol for not. It also requires that we have something else. We need punctuation in sentences that are long and complicated, that have more than just one subject and one predicate, as the syllogisms of Aristotle had. And in order to do that, we need a way to punctuate sentences. Take a look at this silly-looking thing. Mary, where George? Now that looks just absurd. It's a line in which the word had appears 11 times in a row. And if you don't add punctuation, I slipped it in there. If you don't add punctuation, just silly. You say, no, that's ridiculous. It can't be a real sentence. Well, sure it is. If we're talking about an English class and in which Mary, where George had the teacher's approval. See, we've got to have punctuation or sentences don't make any sense. Strings of symbols just run together and you don't know how to understand them at all. And in this system, we use brackets to do that job. So we have, let's quit a curse here. Do you hear brackets? Then bracket this off. This line right here, P, if P, then P, Q, you don't know how to read that. You don't know whether this means if P, then P, and Q, this is true and this is true, or is it if P, then both P and Q are true. And by putting the brackets here, you show that it means the second one. And that's what this is. So the brackets start with the simple parentheses, and then they go to square brackets if you need more, and then they go to the braces if you need more. And if you need more than that, you start over again with bigger parentheses, bigger brackets, and bigger braces. Depends how complicated the sentence is that you want to translate into this. Now, with that brief review and the introduction of brackets, we can do the other five of the rules. This is simple enough, isn't it? If both P and Q are true, then you can put down just P is true, or just Q is true. And that's called simplification. Here's one that will be obvious to you also. If P, then Q. If Q, then R. Therefore, if P is true, R is true. That's called hypothetical syllogism. Again, syllogism because it has two premises, and hypothetical because those aren't categorical statements, they're hypothetical ones. They've got the if-then symbol going. And here's another one. This is called absorption. If P is true, Q is, then if P is true, both P and Q are true. Again, it's obvious. You already said that P is true. And if it is so, it yields Q. So if P is true, both it and Q are true. But that's a rule. Here's another. Now, we can also hook some of these up together. Take a look at this. If P, then Q. And if R, then S. P or R. so Q or S. This is like a double-barreled modus ponens. You got both things going on at the same time. You have two of them. So if you had P and Q, you'd get both Q and S. But you have either one or the other. You don't know which. So you have one or the other of these. You don't know which. By the way, the or here is the weak sense of or. It means one or the other and maybe both. It doesn't mean one or the other, but not both. One or the other, maybe both. So that's what you have here. If the truth of P is going to guarantee Q, the truth of R is going to guarantee S, then if you know that either P or R are true, then you know either Q or S is true. So this is called constructive dilemma. Constructive dilemma. And we've got one for modus tollens too. We've got the if P, then Q, R, then S. We have not Q or not S, we get not P or not R. Destructive dilemma. This is double-barreled modus tollens. And that's our set of inference rules. We've now gone through all 10. We did 5 in the last session. Here's 5 in this session. These require brackets. That's the only new thing. And those are the 10 rules of inference. Those are the rules that you will need to memorize and practice with. Shall I say it again? You need to know these down cold. And you need to be able to see them as patterns in an argument when it's presented to you. You look at the argument on the paper, and it just jumps out at you which moves you can make where. Let me show you that what a proof looks like. Here's a really super simple example. This is where we're going with all of this, is to be able to construct the proof that an argument is a valid argument. All right. They won't come much simpler than this, but suppose somebody gave us an argument for some conclusion, and they said, when we symbolized their argument, it came down to look like this. Sorry about the smeary stuff there. Okay. They say, when we symbolize their argument, it's A and B are true. A or C is true. If A or C is true, D is true. Therefore, and we usually put a slanted line here to separate between the premises and the conclusion. And this, the three dots mean therefore. Therefore, A and D. Again, I say this is a really super simple example. But here's what a proof would look like. We number the premises, and now we number every succeeding line in the proof. And for each new line that we write down, we have to put down over here the rule that justifies it. So my first move is going to be A, all by itself. And how can I get that? Well, it's from simplification of line 1. Line 1 has both A and B. Remember the rule of simplification. If you have two things, you can put down just one of them. So I put down over here simplification of line 1. That's what justifies me in writing A all by itself. Line 4, I put A or C. That's the rule that I said had the wrong name. It's called addition. Remember, to anything I have, I may disjoin anything else I wish. So I put addition to 3. Where does the C come from? Well, I can add anything I want to A, and I want C because that's what I need from line 2. Now look at lines 4 and 2. here's the form for modus ponens. If the left one is true, then the right one is true. Here's the left one, it's true. Therefore, I get D. Modus ponens of 2 and 4. And now I have both A and D, so I can conjoin 3 and 5. A, and write A and D, and there's the conclusion. That's what a proof looks like. A very simple one, of course. This had only a couple of premises. They were compound, not simple categoricals. This is a conjunction. And here a disjunction implies, disjunction is part of a hypothetical, but we can derive A and D step by step and see each step and what rule was used to derive these other lines and the lines upon which the rules were used to do the derivations. That's what you're going to be doing. You're going to be learning, practicing, putting sentences into this little shorthand, this kind of code, and then practicing applying the rules to them to get proofs. Let's take a look at another real simple one quickly so you, again, while this is all still fresh in your mind. Let me just... Making them up isn't easy. Okay, let's take a look at this. A lot more stuff to look at, right? This is a compound. The whole line is a conjunction. It's a conjunction of two disjunctions. It says it's true both that either E or H is true and that either G or F is true. Line 2 is also a conjunction. Conjunction of two implications. If E, then G. If H, then F. Line 3 is a simple categorical, not G. So take a look at this. 4. E. What justifies me in just writing this down? Well, I have two things here conjoined. This and this. So I can write either one of them. That rule was called simplification. Simplification of line 2. Now, line 5, I can get not E. Do you see the modus tollens? It's upside down, but if E implies G and not G, then not E. That's modus tollens of 4 and 3. 6. E or H. Simplification of line 1. I have both these things. I can take either one of them. So this is simp of 1. And now I have E or H, not E. So I get H. And that was disjunctive syllogism of 5 and 6. See it? E or H? Not E, so H. H implies F. Simplification again. I've got both, I have it sitting here, it's conjoined. Either one of those I can take by itself. So simplification of 2. And here's modus ponens. See it? Upside down. H implies F. H, therefore, F. Modus ponens of 7 and 8. Again, a little more complicated. And you will need to be practicing putting sentences into this little shorthand code. And then practice with constructing simple proofs like this. We'll get the more complicated ones in a bit. In fact, I could tell you a couple of things about that. Many times students would ask me when we got to this point, well, do we really have to memorize those rules the way you've been talking about? I mean, they're in the back of the book, right? Any logic book, you can find these rules listed. Can't we use a book? And the answer to this is important. The answer is it wouldn't matter if you did use the book. If you don't know the rules well enough to do without the book, you'll never construct the proofs. You can bring a logic text to the final exam, and it won't help you. You have to know the rules so well that you can just see what to do. If you don't know them that well, you're not going to see what to do. You know, sometimes when I do this kind of proof, somebody says, well, how did you know which one to start with, or how did you know what to do? You know what to do only because you can see what you can do. You can simplify. You know that if you get not G, look, right here. What I'm after is F. It only occurs here. To get F, I'm going to have to get H. Right? What do I need to get H? I need a not E from this line. If I get not E, I'll get H. How am I going to get a not E? Well, here is a modus tollens sitting here, right? E, if E is true, G is not, so E is not. There's my not G. You start with the conclusion, and you backward engineer it. You see what you would need to get this, what you would need to get this, what you would need to get this, and you keep doing that until you come to something you have, and then you run the steps the other direction. There is no other trick. That's why you have to know the rules as well as I've been telling you that you have to know the rules. And you have to practice like crazy with them so that you get adept at doing this. So when somebody says, look, here's an exam, take this argument and put it into symbols and construct a proof. Take this one, it's already in symbols for you, construct a proof. You can just sit down and web it right off. You'll be able to do it. You memorize these in practice, you will do it. I guarantee you. Okay, let's look at one more example, and then we'll close for the day. Going to take a ready-made one this time. Not as okay, somebody has given us an argument. I don't know what this is about, but when we translate it, we get, if Q is true, R is not S. If not S is true, then it implies that T implies U. Either S or Q or T are true. It isn't S. Therefore, it must be that either R or U are true. So how would you go about showing this? Well, here's an obvious one, isn't it? Let me do it this way. Here's a P premise. This implies this. If this is true, then this is true. Here's the P. See, the pattern is modus ponens, and you get then T. If T is true, U is modus ponens of 2 and 4. Okay. What can we do with that? Well, one of the things we want to get is U. So we need to get T somewhere. Not, here's S or Q or T. It's not S, so we get Q or T. This is Q, P or Q, not T, not what's in the P position. Therefore, you get what's in the Q position, which is Q or T. And that's disjunctive syllogism of 3 and 4. What else do you see now? What should we do? It's a little more complicated. Look at this. I can take Q implies R, because I already have that sitting there, and conjoin it with T implies U. And T implies U. This is line 1, and this is line 5. And now, under that, I can put Q or T, because I have not S, and I already got the Q or T. So here's Q or T. I don't really need to rewrite that. I've already got it there, but I was, didn't want it to be upside down. I was afraid you might not see it. But you can see it since I put it down here, right? This is the form we call constructive dilemma. Q, if Q is true, R is. If T is true, U is. Q, either Q or T are true, right? So either R or U are true, constructive dilemma of 6 and 7. But you have to be able to see that stuff popping out at you because you know the rules that well. I wish I could ask every one of you to come up to this board and try one. And what we're going to do in coming sessions here is keep working at this stuff. We're going to practice putting sentences into the logical symbols. We're going to practice constructing proofs in our next session. And then we're going to get the next set of rules. There are 10 more rules. They're not rules of inference. They're rules of replacement. One thing is equivalent to another. So if you have the one thing, you can change the form of it and get an equivalent form. And there are 10 of them. We'll practice a little while with this first set of 10. as I said, and then we'll get the next set, and we'll move on from there. I hope you work at this. If you keep up, it'll be easy. Guaranteed.